You're listening to World Oil's Deep Dive, where you'll get to know the authors of technical articles in World Oil magazine and learn more about their company's technology and how it's shaping our industry. Now, here's your host, Jim Watkins.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here today with Chris Gooch from Altera Drilling Technology, and he is the innovation project manager there, and he's written this incredible article on their most recent innovation. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Glad to be here.
Hey, I see in your bio on the article, it's actually in the October 2020 issue of World Oil, starting on page 21. But in your bio there, you have quite a lengthy history in the industry. So tell us a little bit about your educational background and how you came to be at Altera.
Okay, yeah. So like you say, it's a kind of a long story. I'm 20 years now in the oil industry, which just makes me feel very old. It all started way back. I went to Glasgow University in Scotland, and I actually studied geology there. And I came out of there not really knowing where I wanted to go or what I really wanted to do. And I saw an article in the newspaper that said graduate geologists wanted for work in the oil field. And it just left a phone number. And I called that number and have been working in the industry ever since. That took me onto the rigs. I was a mud logger for a few years and then got a sensible desk job and started working for the service sector. And I've always been in drill bits and downhole tools. I've worked for a couple of different companies. But yes, the most recent one is Altera, and I've been with Altera for 10 years. In fact, I've been with Altera 10 years from yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Just got a long service award handed to me just this morning, so...
I'll tell you, you've been around long enough. You know there's a lot of ups and downs in this business, but you know, it always amazes me how innovative companies like Altera can thrive even in a catastrophic market like we've seen this year so far. So congrats for still having a job and still innovating. That is fantastic.
Thank you. Yes. And yeah, you're right. One of the things that makes me really proud to work for this company is we have people who know what they need to do in order to get through troubled times like we're having right now. And that's what makes it a pretty good place to work.
Yeah. Let's jump into the article here, Chris. As I mentioned, World Oil October issue, starting on page 21. And so you go in a little bit in the intro, kind of in talking about PDC bits and, you know, design and those type of things, and then a general overview of Ripsaw. But where it really gets into the meat, I think, and I just want to jump right there, is on page 22, where you're talking about the development of Ripsaw. And you said it started in 2018. So tell us a little bit about that. How did Altera get involved in that project?
So we were asked by one of our clients. I mean, we're one of the biggest companies out there. We're number one in the United States right now in terms of drill bit supply. So we were approached by one of our bigger customers, and they were working with one of the industry influencers to try and solve this problem that they had, which was transitional drilling. So going very specifically to the 12 and a quarter intermediate section in West Texas, it's really difficult drilling, very unpredictable, breaks a lot of bits. And they were trying to find a way to solve that problem, make it more predictable, be able to reliably drill that section. And so we were invited. We traveled down from our headquarters here in Fort Worth. I was one of the people that went down to Houston to go meet with this client. And we sat in their office and spent a day kind of brainstorming ideas and really looking at the problem and trying to work out exactly what it is that we were having issues with. And it all started from there. So that we promised the client that we would go away, think about it, and try and come up with some kind of solution. And so that's what we did. So from that initial meeting, we then went to our engineering team, our design team, and they sat down over a series of sessions brainstorming ideas. It's literally taking, you know, the smartest people that we have in our company, putting them in a room, locking the door and telling them that they can't come out until they've thought of 100 different things. And so that's what we had them do. And they went through that process. They came up with a number of different design ideas, all of which we kind of looked at, tested, theorized over, and then we started putting bits in the ground. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do at Altera is to do our testing and development in the field. We believe that, you know, the only real way to test a bit is by putting it in the ground and seeing if it will drill. So that's what we did. started doing that with a few different ideas. And the idea that we eventually came to that became this product Ripsaw was just the leader of the pack of all those ideas we tested. So it really started just with that problem and defining exactly what it is that we needed to solve, and then taking it in steps, logical iterative steps, until the point where we had a final product and a final kind of design. And it doesn't really kind of stop there either, because, you know, the product continues to be developed even now as we're using it in different places and trying out different things. You know, we're continuously fine-tuning it and making it better.
Yeah. Now, when you were talking about what is the problem, so talk to us a little bit, because I'm not a technical guy by background, right? I'm a marketing guy. So everything I learn from smart guys like you and these conversations. But transitional drilling, so I get that. That's moving from hard to soft rock or vice versa, right? And why is that such an issue?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And often it's moving in quite quick succession between hard and soft in a lot of kind of thin layers, just by the way that geology is laid down, the way that rock layers form. And that becomes a problem for the bit, because different, as you go through that transition, different parts of the bit are in different types of rock. So at any given moment, as you're drilling through a transitional section, the nose of the profile might be in hard rock, while the rest of the bit is still, or the rest of the cutting structure is still in the softer rock above it. So what happens when we do that is that all of the force, all of the drilling force, concentrates on the cutters that are in the harder rock. And that puts a huge amount of energy into those cutting elements, and that can cause them to break. And that's what you see happen all the time. And it can, you know, as you go through that section, as you go from soft to hard, it concentrates it in one part of the profile. As you go from hard to soft, that energy transition moves out to other parts of the profile and affects cutters there. So as we drill through those transitions, we overload those cutters and we break them up. And that obviously then leads to total destruction of the bit eventually. So it's a real tricky one to deal with.
Yeah, no, it does sound like it. And you mentioned in here too that during one of those brainstorming sessions that you guys started thinking about your counterforce technology. Tell us a little bit about that. What is counterforce technology?
So yeah, counterforce is something that we came up with quite a long time ago. I'm trying to think back now. It's probably about 9 years that we've had counterforce. And all that is playing with the side rake angles of the cutters. So the side rake is the kind of angle of attack. As you're looking at the top of the bit, typically all the cutters are in a straight line, all in a row across the front of the blade. Well, with side rake and counterforce, what we're doing is angling them to basically play with the forces that are being generated at the bit face as it's drilling. So by angling them, we can redirect the cutting force and balance out the bit. And in the same way, that also helps to keep it stable in the bottom of the hole. So the problem that we were trying to solve with counterforce is lateral movement of the bit. So the bit moving side to side at the bottom of the hole. And by angling the cutters, redirecting the forces in a way, it self-stabilizes itself on the bottom of the hole and keeps itself steady. So even though you've got, you know, the BHA and motor and everything moving around above it, the bit is actively trying to stabilize itself and keep itself in the bottom of the hole.
Right. And that gives the title of your piece, right, which is mitigating vibration above the drill bit. And so that vibration causes a lot of damage to things above the bit, right? I mean, as you get the motors are going to have a problem, anything else that's down there, can excessive vibration can damage that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we're just at the moment, we have this series of short videos we call Drilling Minutes. And we're about to pile into one specifically on lateral vibration, because it's such a huge issue and a lot of it is misunderstood. That vibration can come from a number of different places. It can be caused by certain things. It can be accentuated by other things as well. There are many different variables. And yes, it can become very destructive. So anything that we can do to reduce the amount of movement down there is going to be a good thing. You know, keep everything stable, keep it smooth. And that way, there's less things getting broken.
Right. And so the solution and the reason it's called Ripsaw is because it's kind of like Ripsaw blades, right? You have alternating angles that give you cutting equally. Would that be an accurate description?
Kind of, yeah. So what we did is we took that principle of the counterforce. So counterforce, the cutters are angled sideways, and that's what helps to stop or dampen down sideways movement. And then with Ripsaw, We instead played with the angles backwards and forwards on the cutter, so effectively the up and down angle of the cutter, in order to try and control and dampen movement in an axial direction up and down. So, you know, stop the bit from taking really deep bites of the rock, and in the meantime also stop it from sort of bouncing on the bottom of the hole. And that solves a whole bunch of different issues, which we're going to talk about, I'm sure, in a little bit. But yeah, it gives it some janky-looking teeth on there with all these weird angles in there. So the closest thing that we could think of that it looked like was indeed a ripsaw. So that's where it came from.
Yeah, and figure one in the article gives a really good image of that, right? If you can't picture it just from our words, be sure to go to that October 2020 issue, page 22, and take a look at that figure one, because it's quite obvious what the design is there. I mean, the exact angles aren't obvious, but that's got to be top secret, right, Chris?
Yeah, that one's proprietary. But yeah, it looks very strange almost, especially if you're used to looking at PDC bits. Seeing all those cutting elements pointing in all different directions kind of looks weird, but it's very precisely engineered, and those things are defined in a very precise way to make sure that we're doing exactly the right thing.
Yep. And that's what we're going to see in these case studies, because you actually have two case studies in the rest of this article. And so the first one is a 6-month field study in West Texas. And was this the same operator who approached you in the beginning? Was that you were working on the bit and designing the bit with them still?
Yeah. So this was the original application. It was that same operator and many more. We run a lot of 12 1/4 intermediate bits in West Texas. We run an awful lot of them, and along with a lot of other people. So this field study that we did, we basically took every single 12 1/4 intermediate run in West Texas in the preceding 6 months, just data dumped every single run, all the information, which ended up giving us more than 3,000 individual bit runs, basically just over 2,100 different wells. I didn't even bother to count how many different operators, but a number of different operators. But it's all the same. It's all the same kind of application, you know, typical start and end depths, directional profile of the well, all those kind of things. They're all pretty similar. So it was a huge data set for, you know, doing these kind of studies with. And we wanted to do that. We wanted to grab as much information as possible, because by doing that, you get rid of some of the bias. You know, it's very take like a single run, grab a couple of offsets, make a comparison between the two and say, hey, we had a success. But it means a lot more. It's a lot more accurate and meaningful information if you carry out the same thing over hundreds or even thousands of runs. Then we know that we've got something that actually works. So that's what we wanted to look at. And out of those 3,000 runs, we ended up with 400 runs just of the ripsaw technology on itself. So we know that we had a valid data set right there and some valid results.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And we'll get into those results, because on page 23, we even get a little graph there. But just some of the results from the study, right, that the ripsaw had an 80% chance of drilling through the tough transitional part of the section, whereas other types of bits only had a 50% chance of doing the same. I mean, those are big numbers, right?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely huge. There's no operator that's going to turn around and that they say that they don't want a 30% better chance of being able to complete the section. That's an absolutely gigantic thing.
And also in there, you were saying that the average cost per foot was 40% less than other bit types. So that's got to get their attention, right? I mean, isn't that all you have to do is dangle that 40% cost savings in front of operators and they sign up right away? I mean, how does that work?
Right, pretty much. I mean, and that's why, frankly, right now we pretty much dominate this market. Because yeah, those are the kind of numbers that we want to deal with, especially in the current climate. With everything that's going on with the drilling industry right now, our clients want to know, they want reliability, and they want to know what things are going to cost, because they need to be able to plan, and they have, you know, they got tight budgets, they got tight schedules, and more it's important that we help them to reduce the cost and to make things more reliable. Those are the two things that they want from us. So that's absolutely huge.
Right.
And I ran some numbers, and you can take these with a bit of a pinch of salt, but, you know, looking just over that 6-month period with sort of an average rig rate, rough costs, and all those, you know, putting some rough costs into the equations, I estimated that we saved roughly $70 million for all of those operators involved in that study over a 6-month period. And that is gigantic, absolutely huge.
Yeah, no, that, and like you said, I mean, that's what everybody's looking at nowadays. I mean, especially with the price being the way it is, you need to save money everywhere you can for sure and have reliability. And so, I mean, that's the combination of both these things. And you can see that on figure two on page 23, a little graph about the average cost, you know, per foot and the regular, you know, all the rest of the wells in that study versus the ripsaw. So very, very impressive numbers for sure. And then further down on page 23, you get into a second case study, the one about the 9 7/8 inch intermediate section in the Haynesville. So it was led by the sales team out in the Haynesville, yeah?
Yeah, so they decided to take up this technology and give it a try, basically. So like we already discussed, we came up with this idea really to look after that transitional drilling problem. But at the same time, we looked at, you know, axial damping, which is effectively what we're doing here, and thought about what types of other applications that it might work in and that it could be useful for. So we as a company created some of those definitions and said to our sales teams, hey, if you have one of these kind of applications, so with complex directional work, transitional drilling, of course, problems with motor stalling, those kind of things, we think that Ripsaw might be able to help. We can't prove it. We can only prove that it works in transitional drilling. But if you want to try it, we think it'd be good. And our guys out in the Haynesville basically said, you know what, we want to give that a try in this application and see what we can do. And that was the 9 7/8 intermediate section that they've been having a lot of problems with.
Yep. And it was because of the, so it wasn't intermediate drilling as in the other study, but this, you go into a little bit about is the Travis Peak and the Cotton Valley formations. And so what's unique about those that this also works on?
So the unique part of this section is that it really is a two-parter. And in the past, you've had to use at least two different types of bit to be able to drill it. So the 9 7/8 starts off very, very soft. So the first 5,000 feet or so is just real fast, real soft drilling, very easy. You know, you want to use a really nice aggressive bit. The problem is that straight after that, you then hit the Travis Peak and the Cotton Valley. And those are hard and abrasive and they're nasty. So typically what we would do in the past is you run a very aggressive bit through the soft stuff and then you hit the top of the Travis Peak, you wait until the bit basically grinds itself out and then you pull it and you put in something that's a lot more durable. What we were trying to do though, the holy grail of this section is to be able to do it with just one bit rather than having to use multiples, because that's the most cost-effective way of being able to do it. So we tried with the Ripsaw basically and see what it would do. And the theory was that, you know, you could have a more aggressive bit and then because it protects itself, because it's balanced and it's a lot more durable and a lot more reliable, that the same design is not going to tear itself up once you get into the hard rock in the Travis Peak. So we tried it out, and yes, absolutely, the theory was true, and it worked very well, being able to drill the soft stuff just as fast as the aggressive bits that it was replacing, but then still being able to continue lower down in the section when things got really tough.
And again, that's a big cost savings, fewer bits, no pulling it out and sticking another bit on, that type of thing. So for the operators, that was a definite win, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's equipment cost, there's time cost, there's just the human people cost of forcing you guys to trip out of the hole multiple times is never a good thing either.
Yeah, exactly. And then actually, you even have a third case study just in the end, like you snuck in a little one at the end of this article. So that would be on page 24. But you going to talk a little bit about micro stalling, because like I said, I'm not a technical guy. Is that the same as slip stick? Is that what that is?
So it's a little bit different from stick slip in that we're focusing specifically on the motor. So your torsional vibration, your stick slip is typically involves the entire drill string. So everything from the bit all the way up to the drive at the surface is all vibrating torsionally. So you can hear it winding up and down. It's like a coiled spring, you know. The micro stalling that we're talking about here is quite a recently identified thing. The last person that I talked to it about was Fred DuPriest. I heard him do a talk on it. I can't even remember where it was now. But he'd been looking at motors and the internals of motors after they've been run. And by studying the power sections on those motors, he was able to determine that right from the very start, there's a certain amount of chatter going on there. So And that damages the power section within the motor just incrementally as it goes along. So his theory was that, you know, you're getting it, that chatter is kind of coming from the bit. So it's constantly speeding up and slowing down. And we're talking, you know, in hertz here, so a number of times per second. And by doing that, it creates damage. But that energy also transfers further up the string and causes other things to fail too. So I'm being a little bit sort of vague about it because it's a new thing that we haven't completely 100% proven yet, but we seem to be seeing that we can get results where we're seeing that kind of damage to tools and equipment by using Riptor technology. So it's kind of exciting. Okay. It's kind of new, and that's why I kind of snuck it in at the end of the article and didn't write a whole lot about it, because we don't yet have a massive amount that we can say for sure.
Right. Well, but that's got to be interesting because, I mean, that's something that the mode motor guys got to, you know, they have to be very interested in that too, right? Because it makes them look better as well, right? Because now their motor's going to last longer, not going to chunk out as much. I mean, that should be a great thing. I mean, do you guys work specifically with some of those guys, or how is it at this stage? I mean, have you guys said, hey, why don't we, you know, try some runs with this motor and this bit and see how the effect is compared to all the other data you have on your motor, that type of thing?
So that's what we're starting to work on now, yes. In general, as a company, we're really trying to move our focus not away from drill bits, but to see how the drill bit can help other components in the BHA. So we're starting to talk about exactly these issues. And yes, we're starting to, you know, we're working with some smaller companies. I mean, obviously, the huge directional companies out there, unfortunately, a lot of them also have drill bit companies, so they're not very interested in talking to us. But we do get to talk to some of the smaller deals and work with them on some really interesting stuff. And yeah, we've been finding results. Like you said, the theory is with this microstalling that basically as soon as you start drilling with a motor, it starts to degrade. So if you can slow that, I mean, you know, we all talk about motor failure when eventually it really chunks and you know, the whole lining starts coming away and then it causes difficulty and it fails. But actually what we've seen is that right from the very start, on a much smaller scale, it's starting to degrade. And that means it's less powerful, it's less efficient. And obviously, if that wear continues all the way through to the end point, it completely chunks, then we have to pull it out of hole. So yeah, absolutely. So not only are we trying to see if we can help reduce failures on the motor, but we're trying to see if we can improve the efficiency, the power, the speed, and everything else, which helps everybody, you know, involved in the drilling process. So
absolutely,
it's a very interesting thing.
No, that is interesting. I'm gonna dig in a little bit of that because I talk with some of those guys. So I'll try to find out, because you're not going to tell me, right? You're not going to tell me who you're working with on the mud motor side.
Some of it I just can't talk about.
It's those NDAs. Damn those NDAs.
Exactly. Unfortunately, that's what we have to do.
Exactly. But in this case where you were doing this, so this was in Louisiana. It was a record, right? For 24-hour footage record in Louisiana, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, sort of 9 7/8 intermediate section, slightly different, but roughly the same kind of application as we were talking about before. But yeah, absolutely. We managed to hit the all-time Louisiana state record for a 9 7/8 intermediate. So we drilled the entire section in just 4.5 days. We did use 3 bits, but they were 3 identical Riptor designs. It was all the same bit. So that 4.5 days includes 2 trips out of hole as well. So when you think about all of that and drilling 8,700 feet, that's quite an impressive section that we drilled there. Then also we did get a 24-hour footage record, but that was just for the operator pad combination. But the main one was the Louisiana State Intermediate section in 4.5 days.
Impressive. That's impressive. Do you get a trophy or something? I mean, how do you know it's a record? Does somebody just come up and say, hey, do you know that's a record? Or were you guys shooting for that?
I mean, we're shooting for better and better performance. We keep a pretty comprehensive database of basically every single bit run that happens in North America. You know, we have guys going out to the rigs all day, every day, and recording all the information about what's going on. So we have a pretty good idea of what's what. I believe in this case, it was actually the customer, the operator, who told us that it was a state record, though. But we did check and compare against our own database to make sure.
Wow, that's impressive. And that's a great thing when your customers are going, wow, this is the fastest it's ever been done, right? So that's always a good thing. So now before we wrap this up, Chris, going back over the article, was there anything else that you thought was important that you wanted to point out in the whole Ripsaw design and where it can be used, that type of thing?
I don't think there's anything specific other than just to say that, like I mentioned before, this technology, we're constantly evolving it. And we're also constantly trying it in new applications. Really, the problem that we're trying to solve is, you know, axial movement, controlling depth of cut without having like a hard stop in there that prevents the bit from being able to bite. So thinking on the types of applications that kind of technology, that kind of engineering would be useful in, we're constantly expanding this out. There's a lot of parts of the world that we haven't got to yet with this. Then there are a lot of applications that we haven't yet fully investigated. So I think it's just really, you know, important to note that this one is taking off and will continue to do so as we go along. I ran some numbers. We mentioned Counterforce before. Counterforce has been our most successful technology as a company that we ever introduced. And it's on almost every single bit that we have these days. And I anticipate that Ripsaw is going to go that way. Our most successful technology in terms of launch and ramping up the number of runs was our previous one that you probably spoke to Chris Cassad about, which was the split blade technology that we came out with a couple of years ago. And when you look at the numbers on Ripsaw, well, the uptake on Ripsaw is going even faster than split blade. So we expect that this is going to be a forefront technology that is going to be on almost every bit design going forward.
Now, do you think that the uptake is obviously, it's great, and so people should want to use it. But do you think that because of the way the market is now and the way prices are now, that that's also helping propel people to try to get that extra cost savings through your new technology?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it is. Yeah. We've said it before. I mean, you know, the one thing that the customer wants is they want reliability and they want control of their costs. They can't afford to compromise on either of those things. So we're trying to strive to do everything that we can to deliver that to our customers. And Ripsaw is one of the technology solutions that does achieve that. We have other things that we can do that will also help them. But yeah, that is really like in the forefront of everybody's mind right now, is all about that cost saving and reliability.
Yep. No, it is important more now than, you know, just a couple of years back, I believe. So that's fantastic. You guys have the right technology at the right time for sure. Now, let's say like all of these runs we were talking about in these different case studies, these were all in the US and you said you haven't gotten overseas too much. And we have a lot of people who listen to the show from overseas. So if someone wants to get in touch with you, if they have a similar issue and they think you might be able to help, how do they get a hold of you?
There are a number of different ways. We have, if you just go to ultera.com, there is a contact us page on there, which has email address or even a little form to fill in. And that goes directly to Brittany, who's two doors down from me here in the office. So that's a great way to get in touch. You can also hit us up on our social media. We've got very popular Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and we're constantly monitoring those. And if people make comments or ask questions on there, then we'll also respond to that. Those are the best ways to get in touch with us, and we'll do our best to get back to people.
Excellent. And also one other thing, you mentioned it earlier on about this drilling minute. What are these, videos or are they presentations? What are they?
Yeah, so they're little animation videos. You can check out our YouTube channel. It has all of our videos up there, including all of these drilling minute videos. So just go on to YouTube and search Ultera Drilling Minute. And they're little educational videos. We try to keep them to 2 minutes or less, and we'll pick a topic and we'll talk about it and try and explain to it in terms that people both inside and outside of the industry can understand. So they're like a little educational tool for people to learn more about what we do and how we do it. And in fact, we dropped the drilling minute, which talked about transitional drilling and a little bit on Ripsaw just a couple of months ago. So that's up there already, and you can have a look at those.
Excellent. Yeah, I think we'll throw a link in the show notes to your YouTube channel there too to help people find it a little bit easier. But Chris, this was really educational for me, and thank you so much. Congratulations on your 10 years. I mean, so many good things happen in Ultera, even in this market. So that is just congratulations all the way around for you guys, really.
No, thank you very much. And you know, we love the chance to talk about the things we do. We love the chance to try and educate and help people understand about drilling. That's one of our missions. So I'm really glad to hear that, you know, that message is kind of getting through.
Excellent. All right, Chris. Well, I'll tell you what, you're head of innovation. So just one last question and then I'll let you go. What are you guys working on now? I mean, this was something that was started a long time ago, so you must have something in the early stages that you're working on now. I mean, something above and beyond this, or is it just iterations on this until you get it down perfect for different scenarios?
Well, let me say this. This one is iterating, and we're concentrating on making sure that it is, that Ripsaw technology is as good as it can be. We're also in the process of throwing out some weird and wacky ideas and seeing which one sticks. That's kind of how we do things in Ulterra. We create ideas, we try them out, and we see if they work. There have been a few over the last few months that we've tried out and tested, and frankly, they just haven't worked. So we're constantly trying to find that new thing. I don't think we've got something right now that's about to, you know, blow everything else out of the water yet, but we're constantly working on trying to find.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you got your hands full with Ripsaw anyway. By the time you get it, you know, adoption globally and everybody can see what it can do and you can adopt it for different scenarios, that's going to carry you guys for a while, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
Yep. So, Chris, once again, thanks for coming on the show today. And next time you guys get a interesting project or something, be sure and write another article for the magazine. We'll have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Will do, Jim. Thank you very much.
All right, Chris. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Take a look at today's show notes for links we mentioned in the podcast. We enjoy your feedback, so if you have any questions or comments, email them to deepdive@worldoil.com. Check out worldoil.com for the best oil and gas industry technical articles and news. And join us next time for another Deep Dive with World Oil.